Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Monday, May 8th, 2017. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. U.S. Representative Raul Labrador responds to "no one died due to a lack of health care" comment. We'll hear some of the town meeting held in Lewiston Friday. WSU President Schulz responds to racist video associated with WSU, as does an Evergreen columnist. Uptick in racist graffiti in Spokane and vandalism, and the Moscow Urban Renewal Agency wants to expand Legacy Crossing. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. The Idaho Supreme Court has granted Governor Butch Otter's petition to intervene in the lawsuit by 30 state legislators against the state and Secretary of State Lawrence Denny over the timing of Otter's veto of the grocery sales tax repeal bill. Under the Idaho Constitution, the governor has 5 days to veto a bill when the legislature is still in session and 10 days once the legislature ends. The 30 lawmakers argue in their petition to the state Supreme Court the 10-day period starts once lawmakers adjourn the early session, but a 1978 state Supreme Court ruling found the 10-day period begins once the bill is delivered to the governor's office. In the case of the grocery tax repeal bill, it took 2 days for the legislature to deliver the bill to the governor's office. The governor's petition says by overturning his veto, the high court, quote, will upset nearly 40 years of precedent and ultimately alter the balance of power between the executive and legislative branches in favor of the legislature. Otter said he will argue the state Supreme Court should follow its own 1978 ruling that the 10-day clock starts ticking upon delivery, because without it, lawmakers could delay delivering bills they don't want vetoed until after the 10-day period ends. Otter's attorneys wrote, if the state Supreme Court makes a ruling strictly following the 10 days from adjournment language in the state constitution, then they should also strictly follow Article 3, Section 14 of the state constitution, which requires all revenue legislation to begin in the House. The bill in question, House Bill 67A, began as Bill 67 in the House. It was written to cut state income taxes, but the Senate removed everything in the bill about income taxes and replaced it with the grocery sales tax repeal. Idaho currently charges 6% sales tax on groceries. The Idaho Supreme Court will hear oral arguments in the case June 15th. The U.S. Government Accountability Office says in a report to Congress last week, lawmakers should consider not turning nuclear waste into glass-like logs in a process called vitrification, and instead encase all but the most highly radioactive waste in cement-like blocks in a process called grouting. The report says grouting would cut the astronomically high costs of disposing of the waste and would allow the Cold War era waste at Hanford Nuclear Reservation left over from making the first atomic bombs to be processed and stored more quickly. Workers started building the vitrification plant at Hanford in 2002. At the time, it was expected to cost $17 billion, but there have been frequent delays and cost overruns, and the plant is now expected to open in 2023. Washington State Department of Ecology Nuclear Waste Program Manager Alex Smith told the Associated Press in reaction to the Government Accountability Office report, quote, we remain firm in our conviction that vitrification or glass is the superior process. Democratic U.S. Senator Maria Cantwell of Washington reacted by saying she is concerned the study might further delay the nuclear waste work. Cantwell said, we can't afford to get distracted from the job at hand. About 250 people showed up at Republican U.S. Representative Raul Labrador's town hall meeting in Lewiston at Lewis Clark State College Friday. many of them angry over Labrador's vote in favor of the new Republican health care bill passed in the U.S. House the day before. The bill, which, among other things, would allow insurance companies to deny coverage for people with pre-existing conditions, was widely panned Thursday by the Idaho Medical Association, the Idaho Hospital Association, and the group Close the Gap Idaho, who said it will throw an estimated 138,000 Idahoans off their health insurance, including children and people with disabilities and elderly people who rely on Medicaid and people with employer-sponsored insurance and individuals who purchase their insurance on Idaho's health insurance exchange. The issue came up with the very first question asked of the congressman at the Lewiston Town Hall Friday.
I'm concerned because the GOP bill that narrowly passed yesterday is estimated to increase the number of uninsured in Idaho by 75%. I'd like you to talk about why you supported that bill, and more importantly, I'd like to know what you intend to do to increase access to health care for Idahoans and make it more affordable for us.
Great question. So if you look at what Obamacare did, Obama and the Democrats were trying to help 7% of the people who didn't have access to health care. But the problem with Obamacare is that it did it at the expense of 93% of the people that already had access to health care. It made their health rates more increased. It made it less accessible, it made it more difficult for them to have health care, and it made it more expensive, which was the most important thing. So what we did with the bill yesterday is that we tried to help 100% of the people instead of just 7% of the people. So what you do with health care right now, the problem with health care, with Obamacare, and with the current system, is that families have health insurance, but they really don't have more access to health care. We just received an email from a gentleman who says that he's paying about $1,500 a month on his health care. He has a $15,000 deductible, and he's never able to access his health care. That's very unaffordable. So what we want to do is we want to reduce the cost of health insurance for all Americans. So what we did is we got rid of some of the regulations in Obamacare that are going to drive down the cost of health insurance. When you drive down the cost of health insurance, you actually make it more affordable and more accessible to more Americans. But we also put about $130 billion into these high-risk pools, and those $130 billion are going to help those people that have been
You're funny and you're lying.
You don't have to call people liars. You can tell me that we disagree.
Call each other liars. I'm calling you a liar because you are misinformation.
If you have a question, just go ahead and say question.
I hope.
Okay.
That was from U.S. Representative Raul Labrador's town hall meeting in Lewiston Friday. Labrador also heard loud objections when he said he wants to move people from the subsidized health insurance market under the Affordable Care Act to the private insurance market.
Why is it that the health of our physical infrastructure, why is it that that's a priority in our country and we expect government to provide it, but human health care, which is critical to our economic productivity and success, really not a priority? Why can't we expect to get that from government as well?
That's an excellent question. You pay taxes, usually gas tax or some other tax, to pay for the roads. But it doesn't take care of every one of your needs. It doesn't buy your car. It doesn't buy the kind of car that you drive. It doesn't buy any of those things. It just provides just an average. Everyone has a safe road to drive on and those things. With healthcare, we provide healthcare for the most vulnerable. We already do. We did before Obamacare, and we're going to continue to do it after Obamacare. We have Medicaid. before, we had Medicare, we were taking care of the vulnerable, and we're going to continue to take care of the vulnerable. But what I want, Medicaid is not a good program, and Medicare is not a good program. I want to move people out of those roles and put them in the private health insurance market so they can receive better. I want people to have better health care. Some people apparently don't. So that's my goal.
Republican Representative Raul Labrador of Idaho. In this exchange with a constituent, Labrador heard about concerns over the winners and losers in the new health care bill if it were to become law.
Can you share with this group how the tax cuts for people with a couple with over $250,000 a year, taxable income, not total income, taxable income, helps people with low and middle income with their health care?
Fair question.
So if you remember, I opposed the first version of this bill. And the main reason I opposed it is because it did mostly tax cuts and not enough about health care. And to me, that was wrong. It was more of a tax cut bill than a health care bill. So I spent the last 6 weeks making sure that this was a health care bill. We got rid of the Obamacare taxes that were in Obamacare, but we also made health care more affordable through this bill. So we were helping everybody, all of you. My job is to help the vast majority of Americans, to help the largest group of people that I can help, and that's what I think we did with this bill that we passed yesterday.
I disagree with you, I hope you come back and can prove me wrong. I doubt it. The MIT professor who studies reported yesterday that this is probably the single most, for one bill, as the greatest transfer of wealth from poor to the wealthy of any bill.
Promise that you were going to pay less for your health insurance, you were going to have more affordable care, families were going to save more money, and all those things proved to be incorrect.
Not
this, this bill, no, for the majority of Americans, it was correct. You helped, like I said earlier, you helped 7% of the people at the expense of 93% of the people, and that's just not what we should be doing.
Yeah, we need to go to the next
person. Thank you very much.
That was from Friday's town hall meeting with U.S. Representative Raul Labrador in Lewiston. The comment that nobody dies because they don't have access to health care came about an hour and a half into the two-hour town hall meeting. Labrador sent a statement to the Idaho Statesman Saturday saying his comment wasn't very elegant and was taken out of context. Labrador wrote, "I was responding to a false notion that the Republican health care plan will cause people to die in the streets, which I completely reject. In a lengthy exchange with a constituent, I explained to her that Obamacare has failed the vast majority of Americans. In the 5-second clip that the media is focusing on, I was trying to explain that all hospitals are required by law to treat patients in need of emergency care regardless of their ability to pay, and that the Republican plan does not change that." Labrador's office posted a 6.5-minute exchange with a constituent on YouTube, ending with the "nobody has died because of lack of health care" quote. Here is the final 2 minutes and 20 seconds of that exchange and Labrador's quote.
"I need to go to a doctor, and nobody within 100 miles of me will accept a patient that cannot pay cash at front for their services or that is on Medicaid. Explain to me what my access is.
So, to go to the ER?
So
Medicaid, people are doctors are refusing Medicaid patients right now under Obamacare.
Doctors were refusing Medicaid patients long before Obamacare, because the government paying the rate is so low. So even under Obamacare, doctors are refusing Medicaid.
So don't try to blame Republicans.
I'm not trying to blame Republicans. I'm saying that the problem is, if you take take away health care, people cannot go to the doctor and they die.
So what the state will do is they will reduce the cost of health insurance for that 97%.
But and you we'll don't have money. Any money to buy health insurance. Listen. It doesn't matter.
And the 7% that don't have that insurance, then the state will look, it's going to have $130 billion that's going to be divided among all the states to provide access for those people. We are going to help more people than Obamacare helps right now.
This is not a plan. You're saying $130 billion. What are you going to provide for people?
The states are going to have to decide how to do that.
How is Idaho going to do that? In the meantime, we're going to have $20 million more costs that everyone in this room needs to cover.
Oregon, it didn't work in Oregon. What you're claiming is going to happen here, already happened in Oregon under Obamacare. By increasing the cost of Medicaid, Oregon actually saw more expenses out of their coffers. So it cost them more to have Medicaid patients, and it cost them more in healthcare delivery. So
where's the $20 million going to come from that it's going to cost us on top of what we're already paying? These are the people that will pay that.
They're going to reduce the cost for everybody.
How?
I just explained it to you.
Are you going to make regions reduce their rates? Are you going to mandate that regions reduce
their rates? I don't mandate anything to agents.
Mandating people on Medicaid except dying. You are making a mandate.
No one wants anybody to die. You know, that line is so indefensible. Nobody dies because they don't have access to health care.
That was U.S. Representative Raul Labrador and the audience at a town hall meeting at Lewis Clark State College in Lewiston Friday. Tom Hansen of MoscowCares.com supplied audio for this story. KRFP will broadcast the entire town hall meeting tonight at 9 p.m. You're listening to the KRFP Evening Report. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman. Reports of racist graffiti and vandalism have become more frequent in Spokane in the last few weeks. Someone broke into the Salish Native American Immersion School on North Maple Street in Spokane late Thursday or early Friday morning and wrote racial slurs on the walls. Staff at the school, where students between the ages of 1 and 11 are immersed in the Salish Native American language, covered up much of the graffiti before children arrived for the day Friday. The vandal or vandals also tore down part of a craft project showcasing trees. Salish school board member Danica Partner said, as far as school staff can tell, nothing was missing. School executive director Larae Wiley told the Spokesman Review, "It was shocking. Whenever I experience racism and hatred, it always catches me off guard because I know Spokane isn't that way. We support inclusivity and diversity. We have great neighbors. The community has been so supportive." The words "get out" were spray painted in dripping gray paint on the side of a garage where a refugee family lives in Spokane. A neighbor discovered the graffiti Friday and reported it to police. The garage is the home of Wilmot Morgan, who arrived in the U.S. as a political refugee from Liberia in 2004. Morgan told the Spokesman Review he and his wife and three children have lived in the home for 3 years. Morgan said, "When I saw it, I was stung. This is the first time I've ever had this kind of experience. I have a good relationship with all my neighbors." Morgan is a legal resident and works as a truck driver. His wife is also a refugee from Liberia and is now a U.S. citizen. In another incident, April 28th, someone wrote anti-Semitic graffiti on the back of the community building at 35 West Main in Spokane, where many social justice groups have their offices. Washington State University President Kirk Schulz posted a press release Thursday condemning a racist video that appeared recently and has been associated with the university. The video includes part of a video recorded by College Republican President James Alsup of a student counter-demonstration against the Student Republicans' wall, which they built on campus in November to support President Trump's efforts to close the U.S.-Mexico border to poor Mexicans. White student-age men, including one in a Trump hat and T-shirt, were arguing in the video with a group of three black women, also student age. The video is edited with a still frame of one of the women with the words, "I think you should go back to Africa," superimposed on it. At the end of the video, an unrelated clip has a child uttering the N-word. According to Schulz, the video, quote, "was intended to cause pain to our community of color. At WSU, the attitudes, behavior, and language expressed in the video are not acceptable. Individuals with those beliefs are not welcome in our community." According to the Spokesman Review, College Republican President James Alsup said he had shot the original footage with his cell phone and uploaded it to YouTube. Alsup wrote on Twitter Thursday, "His footage was used without his permission and he did not add edits of unrelated content." Alsup wrote, "In perhaps the most hilariously embarrassing moment for WSU's admin this year, they've launched a full investigation into a meme." Essentially, the Facebook page Ultra Meme Lord used content from my YouTube channel to create a pretty overtly racist meme video. Here's the thing, though. The video can't even be traced back to WSU, an anonymous Facebook meme page created it. Also can be seen in the heated argument with the black women in the video, along with other college-age men. The Spokesman Review asked Alsup about his views on race, and he told the paper about British professor Richard Lynn, who asserts eugenics shows whites and Asians are genetically superior. Lynn also asserts nation's power depends on racial homogeneity. The Southern Poverty Law Center reports mainstream scientists have panned Lynn's research. WSU student Victoria Young, a member of the university's critical incident response team, was among those who heard about the video, tracked it to a Facebook page, and reported it to the administration. Young told the Daily News, "We were appalled and disgusted. Graduation is coming and finals are happening right now. It's hard for us to concentrate." WSU President Kirk Schulz released a statement Thursday, which read in full, "Last night, I was informed about a highly offensive and racist video that was posted online. The video, which incorporated footage from a student demonstration on Terrell Mall on the Pullman campus in November, was intended to cause pain to our community of color at WSU. It directly impacted our students of color studying for final exams. I have said this before and will repeat it once again. The attitudes, the behavior, and the language expressed in the video is not acceptable. It's not acceptable to me, our senior leadership, or the greater Cougar community. Individuals with those beliefs are not welcome in our community. We will recommit in our actions as well as in our words to building a truly welcoming and inclusive environment at WSU. We are not progressing quickly enough. I have directed our provost and executive vice president Dan Bernardo and vice president for student affairs Mary Jo Gonzalez to begin working with our students, faculty, and staff on ways to continue to improve our campus climate and formally respond to the ideas members of campus are bringing forward to address these issues. I have asked that we have a preliminary report completed and distributed to the WSU campus community by June 1st. In order to keep the community informed of progress, we will create a web page where the community can provide input about our efforts, suggest ideas for us to implement, and hold us accountable for living the values we espouse at WSU. I remain confident that by utilizing the passion, talent, and great ideas of our WSU faculty, staff, and students, that we will do better and continue on our journey toward inclusion for all." That was a statement released by WSU President Kirk Schulz Thursday. The WSU student newspaper, The Daily Evergreen, Friday published a column by Bashira Ajiman, one of the women seen in the video. Agyeman wrote, "The video featured myself and other women of color in heated discussions with members of the College Republicans. However, statements of the three women whom the video mainly focused on were depicted out of context. In addition, the video was edited in such a way that it racially ridiculed the two women, even going so far to say, 'I think you should go back to Africa.'" Clearly, the person behind the video felt comfortable enough both in his own social location as well as within the climate of this school to create such a video. This is, of course, not surprising when you have actual leaders of student organizations promoting and encouraging dangerous rhetoric against disenfranchised people. This video is the result of months of tensions between underrepresented and marginalized students and any other student who found themselves unconcerned or in agreement with the Trump wall. That event never should have happened in the first place. The fact that the university allowed the erection of the Trump wall contributed greatly to the animosity towards students of color manifested in the last few days. The women in the video are members of my community, the Black community, a coalition of students of color, of underrepresented people who do not feel their concerns are being heard or that they are wanted and safe on this campus. As of now, the creator of the video remains unknown since the video was leaked on an anonymous account. But students of color are weary and disheartened by the constant incidents of microaggression, minimization, and marginalization that occurred day in and day out. That was from a column in the Friday edition of the WSU student newspaper, The Daily Evergreen, by Bashira Agyeman. The Moscow Urban Renewal Agency is continuing its efforts to expand the Legacy Crossing Urban Renewal District. On Thursday, Urban Renewal Agency commissioners discussed expanding the district to include Main Street and possibly an area to the north between A and C Streets, including the St. John Hardware property. The purpose of the Legacy Crossing Urban Renewal District is to spur a transition of properties from former agricultural and/or industrial uses to new uses, creating more cohesive zoning arrangements, adding diversity to the general business and residential office mixed-use zones, and transforming the area from its current economic liability to economic vibrancy. The district was formed to eliminate conditions impeding the city's economic growth in an area between Moscow's historic downtown and the University of Idaho campus. Avista Utilities reported about 11,000 Moscow customers were without power for 4 to 5 hours Friday evening after lightning hit a substation on the Troy Highway. Power was out through much of the city, including downtown, with the exception of the north and west sides of the city. Traffic moved hesitantly through non-functioning traffic lights in downtown Moscow for the duration of the outage. Power finally returned in stages starting just after 9 p.m. In some areas, it returned in downtown Moscow at about 9:30 p.m., with the last customers getting their power back around 10 p.m. Friday night. Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Take a look at the weather forecast for the Moscow-Pullman area. It will be partly cloudy tonight, low 39. Clear skies Tuesday through Wednesday, high 69 Tuesday and 76 on Wednesday, with a low of 44 Tuesday night. Wednesday night, partly cloudy, low 51, and a 30% chance of showers and thunderstorms in the afternoon. Thursday, partly sunny, high 75. Currently at the Pullman Moscow Regional Airport, clear skies 63 degrees. Thanks for tuning in to the KRFP Evening Report. Coming up next is Eat the Airwaves, news and opinions from the West Side, followed by Flashpoints, the daily investigative news magazine from Pacifica Radio. Our call-in talk show, What's Left, is coming on at 7:30, and at 9 o'clock we'll bring you the entire U.S. Representative Raul Labrador public town hall held in Lewiston Friday. That'll run for about 2 hours, and then we'll have music all here at KRFP Moscow Pullman. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscast you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP, be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. That's KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. Or you can go to the KRFP website to find out more ways to help KRFP. I'm Lee Robartis. Have a good night. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman, community radio for the Palouse and 90.3 on your FM dial and online. Remember, all editions of the KRFP Evening Report are archived on the KRFP website for streaming and download shortly after broadcast.
KRFP is supported by listeners like you and Rembrandt Tree Care, family owned and operated since 1977. A conscientious approach to urban forestry with year-round tree service on the Palouse and surrounding areas. You can reach Rembrandt Tree Care at 509-330-0699.
KRFP thanks all of its donors and underwriters for helping make this programming possible.